Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of February. I almost said January, but it's February. Coming up in just a moment, don't miss this. David Sanger, one of the best reporters around on The Inheritance. He'll be joining us to talk about the world that was left to President Obama. But at the moment, it is our winter membership drive, and I am right here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm sure you know that listener donations are really the foundation of our budget, and it's why we, not very often, but every now and then, ask for your gift, and we're asking for it right now. Make your pledge of support at WPR.org or toll free 888-202-2552. Cheryl Gasser has come in from Madison, our talk director, to join me in our studio. Hello, Cheryl.
Good morning, Kathleen. So glad to be here on this beautiful sunny day, cold though, in Milwaukee. We have a goal this hour. By 10 o'clock, we want to raise $2,500. Meeting that goal helps to keep this program and everything else that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio possible in the months and years to come. So your contribution, whether it's $60, $120, a dollar a day, any amount that you choose will help us to get to that overall goal. So make your pledge now online, WPR.org, or call us toll-free, 888-202-2552.
We're going to be hearing from this hour's guest in just a moment. David Sanger will be our guest. Bob Schieffer, who's the chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, a man I admire, has said about Sanger that he's broken through the secrecy and the government gobbledygook to tell us how we got to where we are and the choices this leaves for the next administration. This is one of the most important books of the year, Bob says, and that's reiterated by many other important people in the press. He's the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts, and The Challenges to American Power. And this book will be yours this morning if you give us a pledge of $150. Take a moment to think about how much Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. Make your support, of your pledge support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Of course, you give for the wonderful programs like Kathleen. You have 8 hours a week, wonderful programming, politics at 9, lighter topics at 10. You do such an amazing job of covering it all. It doesn't matter what the topic
is.
You've got
it.
Such a passion for learning, and that shows. Every listener out there knows it. Make your pledge of support now to Wisconsin Public Radio, to Kathleen Dunn in particular during this hour. Your pledge of support goes to support all the programming, but this hour in particular. If you love politics and you love Kathleen Dunn, let's hear from you now. Again, a donation of $150 a year or more. Break it down monthly, $12.50 a month for Kathleen Dunn and Joy Cardine and Ben Marins and Larry Mueller and all the news from NPR, everything you've got on Wisconsin Public Radio. $12.50 a month. We will be happy to send you The Inheritance. David Sanger, of course, the chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times. And in the book, Kathleen, I mean, he covers Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, North Korea, China, talks about the Bush president and what Obama's got to do going forward. What a great book, what a great topic, and you're going to bring him to listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio today. So thank you for all the wonderful work that you do. And listeners, it's worth a pledge of support, so make it now.
We do have wonderful guests, and we've been through so much together. I know that all of you listening care about what's going on in the world, what's going on nationally. Think of all the political shows we have brought to you over the course of the past year. I think they've just been fabulous. And the other thing I need to tell you, and I hope you know this, almost every single guest we have, and I'm not exaggerating, says what a great audience you are. Your phone calls are so smart and intelligent and creative. So kudos to you for all that you bring to this program as well. You get news, information, what other people are thinking about these issues, programs that clear your mind, programs that inform you and entertain you. Support all of the programming that you value securely online at WPR.org or toll-free. And that number is 888-202-2552.
888-202-2552. You know, supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things that you could do with 3 minutes of your day. And that's all the time it takes. You just tell us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to contribute, and how you'd like to pay. Of course, we keep all of your information private just between you and us. Your gift today will become stories and programs and talk shows that keep you connected to the world all in just 3 minutes. So make your contribution now online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And we have a gold, Cheryl, of $2,500, which I hope we should be able to reach. It's this gift that we have for you this hour with your $150 pledge is indicative of the kinds of programs that we do. Top-notch guest, terrific book, great background information for all the political shows we do. We are at $960.
Already. Excellent.
So we need to make up. You think I'm doing this myself? I'm not. It's on a screen. $1,540 in order to reach our goal of $2,500. We want to thank all of you who have donated already today and ask you to donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And I thank you, Cheryl, for coming in to pledge with us today.
I'll be back, Kathleen.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Thanks very much. Again, the number is 888-202-2552. And we're very happy to have David Sanger with us this hour. David is considered one of the best reporters in the business, actually. He's the author of The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts, and The Challenges to American Power. He's been the chief Washington correspondent of The New York Times and has been at The Times for 26 years, has won all kinds of awards for investigative, national security, and White House reporting, has been a member of two teams that won the Pulitzer Prize. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and most importantly to our discussion, he spent 7 years covering the Bush administration day by day, traveling with the president around the world, and circling back to talk with the leaders who had dealt with him. The book looks backward at the seismic events that led Americans to lose so much standing and leverage in the world, and it looks forward to reimagine the ways that we can rebuild our influence and our power. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen, and it's great to be with you on Pledge Week. I've got to tell you, I've already made my pledges to our local NPR stations, which I'm addicted to. So
good to hear, David.
So there we go. We can move on to other subjects. But it's when I'm in Wisconsin, I'm always listening to you guys.
Terrific. And I must say that I'm addicted to the New York Times. So there we go.
There you go. Mutual addictions.
Exactly. And they're good ones, I think. You got a lot of inside sources here, sir. This is a fabulous book.
Thank you very much.
It's very, very interesting.
It took a little while to put together.
I would imagine.
It's not short, as you've noticed.
No, it's not short, but it's just so darned informative with lots of insight. You know, I love the way you started, too, with this meeting in Chicago with McConnell and Barack Obama, who's beginning to get—he must have, at that moment in time, had a real sense of how enormous this job is of being president of the United States. Can you tell us about that meeting and what information he was given?
Well, the book opens with Barack Obama's first security briefing, and it was actually during the campaign. It was the Tuesday of the Republican National Convention, a time when the Democratic candidate is usually, a little bit quiet. And so he went over to the FBI building in Chicago and went up to they chose the FBI building because it had a secure room in it where he could get this briefing. And the same briefing was made available, of course, to John McCain. And Mike McConnell, the director of national intelligence at the time, he just left that job a few weeks ago, showed up with 12 or 13 reports that he had specially prepared for the presidential candidates. And these were much more detailed than the reports that usually go to presidential candidates. This is a tradition that actually was first ordered up by Harry Truman, who didn't want anybody ever to step into the job again as ignorant as he had. He had been in the job for 12 days before somebody mentioned to him that we had this little thing going on in the Southwest to develop an atomic bomb. And, you know, within months, he had to decide whether to drop it on Japan. And you know, his view was no candidate should ever come in, you know, as blind as he was. And he had been vice president, right? Senator Obama, at the time, candidate Obama, went through these issues, and they were pretty predictable. They were Afghanistan and Pakistan and the rise of al-Qaeda, but more importantly, how it is that we were suddenly fighting three insurgencies there instead of one. Al-Qaeda, the big T Taliban who were trying to go into Afghanistan, the small T Taliban who were trying to topple a nuclear-armed Pakistan. It described North Korea. It went into great detail about the Iranian nuclear program, and he was very interested in that and asked a lot of questions about that. What it didn't tell him, and Kathleen, this is sort of the most interesting, is that President Bush had ordered that not until the election would either of the candidates be told about ongoing covert operations. So this was the briefing about what's wrong in the world, and 2 days after he was elected, he went back to the same room and got the first briefing on what it is we're trying to do about it. And part of that is revealed in the first two chapters about Iran, when I describe how the Israelis had come to the United States and come to the Bush administration early last year and asked for the equipment needed and the overflight rights needed to take out the Iranian nuclear facilities, and how President Bush had talked them down by describing a new covert program that the administration had started up and that Barack Obama inherits.
Was there the Iranian chapter is fascinating, because if you look at all parts of the world, what we didn't do with Iran probably got us into this fix. You tell some very interesting stories about chances that we had, and you detail right after September 11 when we had a really candlelight vigils going on in Iran, people who wanted to reach out to us, and we kind of blew it.
We kind of did. And, you know, the overall theme of the inheritance, and one of the reasons that I went out to go write the book after, as you said, these 7 years as White House correspondent for The Times, which is, you know, a fabulous perch, and you'll learn a lot of things, but you divide your world up into, you know, 800 and 1,400 word segments that we put into the New York Times. But you don't have a chance to sort of tie together all the connective tissue, and that's what the book tries to do. And the argument I make in the book is that the decision to go into Iraq turned out to be a huge distraction from both greater threats that were coming together, the Iranian nuclear program, North Korea, Afghanistan, you know, the resurgence of the Taliban in Afghanistan, and great opportunities that we had, including trying to open up a different dialogue with Iran, trying a very different kind of dialogue with the Chinese. And when I call it a distraction, Kathleen, I don't mean that the Iraq War was the right decision or the wrong decision or the right decision badly executed. You've probably done several programs on that subject. But instead, that it so occupied the top leadership of the United States that they simply did not have the bandwidth to deal with either greater threats or greater opportunities.
Right. Tell us about the meeting. This is a fascinating story. Some people's histories go for decades and decades and decades and informs their present, I'm sure. Robert Gates in Iran.
Well, Robert Gates, we all now know as George Bush's defense secretary and Barack Obama's defense secretary. And boy, if there's a set of memoirs coming down the road that I want to read, it's like, what's it like to work for one guy and what's it like to work for the next?
I'll bet. Yeah.
You show up at work the next day, you got a different boss, and the world's changed a little. Bob Gates's history with Iran goes back to 1979, right after the Iranian Revolution. And he was a 36-year-old CIA official, officer at the time, who had been seconded over to go work for Shibnu Brzezinski. And Brzezinski and he went out to Algiers to meet the leaders who had emerged from the Iranian Revolution. And at that time, the United States had given the Shah a chance to come to the U.S. to be treated for cancer. You may remember that he was dying of cancer. It was sort of a humanitarian gesture. But the leaders of Iran sat there in these meetings, and every time that Brzezinski and Gates would say, look, we can understand a way that we can open relations with you, we are willing to have discussions with your government and so forth, they would stand up and say, give us the Shah, give us the Shah. And this went on for hours until finally Brzezinski said, to give you the Shah would be incompatible with our national honor. He walked out, and Gates walked out. And as Gates said later on, that was the last time in 30 years that we had a serious discussion with the Iranians.
Oh, my gosh.
The Shah was not given back. A few days later, the leaders they met were dismissed. The hostages were taken in our embassy. And things have not really gone so well since. So Bob Gates comes to the Iranian program with, you know, this background, extraordinarily valuable background, but he did something else. Remember, when he got confirmed after Donald Rumsfeld was cast out of office, the first marker he laid down during his confirmation hearings was he said, I don't think there is a way to solve the Iranian nuclear program with an attack that would not result in either a broader war or retaliation against American forces. And in the end, I think it's probably Gates himself who stood between George Bush and any effort to do an overt military program.
Isn't that something? The importance of a person, huh? Mm. David Sanger is our guest. We're going to welcome phone calls for him. Our number to join us online is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The Inheritance is the name of his book, getting just high acclaim everywhere, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. David also looks at, we'll talk about Afghanistan because we had McGovern on earlier this week. Do you remember that? Saying his advice to the new president is get out of Afghanistan. David has a different point of view, but we will talk about Afghanistan and whether or not we did put too many resources in Iraq, and that was a problem from the last administration. And we'll look at Pakistan and China and North Korea and you name it. Join our conversation, 800-486-8655, because these don't happen very often. I do want to remind you we're in a pledge drive, and for just this hour, for a $150 pledge, we will be very happy to send you David Sanger's book, The Inheritance. So that pledge number, you can keep these numbers in mind at the same time, I'm sure, is 888-202-2552, or go to that WPR.org website, WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Sanger is our guest. The book is The Inheritance. Let me just quickly go to Afghanistan before we start taking phone calls, David. We had Senator McGovern. It was a great hour talking about Abraham Lincoln, one of my heroes, the other day. But he wanted to make sure in the conversation that he gave the new president warning about Afghanistan. His warning was, get out of the country. It's a downfall of empires. We're not going to get anywhere. The president has called for more troops. And you write extensively about Afghanistan. Did we take too much money from fighting a resurgent Taliban there to put it into Iraq? What do you think we need to do in Afghanistan?
Well, to your second question about Iraq, before we get to the future of Afghanistan, absolutely. You know, we had a White House in power here that told me every day when President Bush was here, no, we are not bleeding Afghanistan to pay for the Iraq war. We're not taking resources out of one to go into the other. Three chapters of the book, I think, are a reported refutation of that view. You will see in the book every American ambassador to Afghanistan, every U.S. commander to Afghanistan, and several intelligence officers who operated in Afghanistan all tell versions of the same story, which is that assets were literally picked up in 2002 and pulled out and moved to Iraq because that was the next conflict. In fact, in one case, a CIA operative comes in to mount an operation against the Taliban, and he goes over to meet the special forces who he usually borrows from the military to go do these. And they looked at him and said, didn't you get the memo? Our guns, everything else, just got shipped to Kuwait. Sorry. But the bigger theme here is this: that the U.S. assessment through 2003 and 2004 was that the Taliban had been liquidated. They were totally defeated. And in fact, the story is told in here of Nicholas Burns, who you may remember as the Undersecretary of State, bringing a bunch of NATO ambassadors through Afghanistan to convince them that NATO should come in and act as peacekeepers. And they sit through a briefing where the military says the Taliban are gone. Well, they weren't gone. They had just shifted 50 or 100 miles over the border into Pakistan. Now, to your bigger point about what do we do from this point on, the book makes two arguments. The first is President Bush was right about one thing. If you let Afghanistan just go, it will sooner or later become a sanctuary for terrorism and probably terrorism aimed at the United States. And my guess is that you could not have another president survive an attack on the U.S. or elsewhere that came out of the same area. And every terror attack since 9/11, 9/11 included, attacks in Europe and elsewhere, have all been traced back to the tribal areas along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. But the second argument I make is Afghanistan is a big problem, and as Senator McGovern said, an extraordinarily ungovernable one. Pakistan is the bigger problem. You can't solve the Afghanistan problem until you stop the sanctuary in Pakistan. And if Pakistan itself, which is being increasingly Talibanized throughout the country, if it falls, you then have lost a country that has 100 nuclear weapons. And that's why 20,000 words of book are devoted to taking readers inside the Pakistani nuclear program, which they let me into to some degree, and examining the question of how safe are their weapons, and more importantly, how safe are their laboratories. One of the pieces of news in the book is that American intelligence agencies believe that Pakistani scientists who are being trained in Europe are being recruited by al-Qaeda and other groups to see whether or not they have enough jihadist sympathies that they could be infiltrated into the Pakistani nuclear program.
Oh, my gosh. That's frightening, isn't it?
It's not a happy situation. I did emerge from this convinced that the weapons themselves are fairly safe, that the warheads have been separated from the delivery vehicles, that the triggering devices have been separated from the warheads. One would hope so, because the United States has spent $100 million over the past 4 or 5 years on a covert program to help the Pakistanis secure those weapons. On the other hand, we don't know how good a job they did, because the Pakistanis are so afraid that we have some SEAL team hanging offshore waiting to seize their weapons, that they won't show us where the weapons are or even give us a count of how many there are. And, you know, they're probably right. We probably do have that SEAL team.
Let's go to Mike from Appleton, our first caller. Hi, Mike. Hello, Mike. Are you there? No, Mike doesn't seem to be there. So we'll go to Brenna from Madison. Hi, Brenna.
Hi, Kathleen. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Okay. Well, Mr. Sanger mentioned sort of like obstacles and opportunities, and I'm really curious to know what are some opportunities that the United States has abroad. It seems like, you know, we're really, and rightly so, focused on the dangers, but I would really be excited to hear that there are some positive things that we could be engaged in abroad that we could really make a difference in and rebuild some of our national prominence. And I'll take my
answer. Thanks, Brenna. It's a wonderful question. Thank you.
Brenna, that's a great question. And I go into a couple in the book. But let me start with China, because it may be the biggest opportunity of all. You know, when we look back maybe 50 or 100 years from now, when, you know, my kids or your kids or grandchildren are writing, you know, a history of this period, my guess is that the rise of China will seem to so dwarf the issues that we've been sitting here discussing about Afghanistan and Pakistan and terrorism. One of the lost opportunities of the Bush years, I think, was sitting down with the Chinese, recognizing that they had not only the fastest-growing economy, but they are the fastest-growing consumer of energy and the fastest-growing emitter of carbon fuels, and saying, look, between the two of us, we can come to some accord on both global warming and energy consumption, and then go out to negotiate something broader with the rest of the world. Because imagine the power of having the world's biggest economy and the world's fastest-developing economy set some agreements together and then go try to get everybody else to sign on. That's an enormously powerful concept. It never happened. I argue in the book that one of the reasons the Chinese may well be open to this is that if you look at the protests that go on against the Chinese government, they're not over ideology, because the Chinese government doesn't have any ideology anymore other than economic growth. But rather, they are over the poisoning of streams and ponds and industrial pollution and people just trying to keep their kids safe, as
and
we
babies,
all want to do.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry?
And babies. They're poisoning people.
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of, you know, the environmental issues are what put Chinese out on the street. And so you go to the Chinese government and you say, look, we've been through this, you know, over the past 100 years. We have technology and expertise to sell you. It will help keep the Communist Party in power. That's a way to get their attention, right? And, by the way, it will help close our trade deficit, which is becoming an increasing problem. And if you need a third benefit out of this whole thing, it will be an area where we can cooperate without arguing over who's the biggest power in Asia or, what Taiwan. It is in many ways somewhat apolitical. We can do this on a sort of scientific and development and health basis and economic cooperation. So we can depoliticize it. And so I think, to my mind, it's a threefer. You don't get many of those in foreign policy.
Thanks, Brenna, for the call. Let's go to John from Madison next. Hi, John, are you there?
I noticed this week that Zardari in Pakistan signed a ceasefire with the Taliban in the Swat region because he doesn't want to destabilize his country, which indicates how much problems we're going to have with Pakistan and anything being done in Afghanistan. But the real reason I called this morning was that there was an article in the New York Times by Charlie Savage yesterday, and it appears that if you look at what Leon Panetta said, if you look at what Eric said, if you look at what Kagan said, if you look at what Schultz said, Obama's not going to differ all that much in the really egregious aspects of the Bush administration in regards to such things as habeas corpus, torture, extraordinary rendition, invoking state secrecy. And for all of us, this is all of us that care about civil liberties and the authoritarian drift of this country in the last administration, this is a real depressing move. And I just wondered what your perspective on this is.
I'm in the Times Bureau right now, and I just ran into Charlie in the stairway, and I said to him what a fabulous, fascinating story that was. It was not on our front page because it was a busy news day, and I wish it had been because it was a really interesting piece, and I think your readers should all go on NYTimes.com and take a look at it. Part of the argument of the inheritance is that while Barack Obama got elected on a campaign that was all about change, every president discovers that it's a lot harder to change once you get in office than it seems when you are campaigning. And so I think you're going to see this in some of the detention and interrogation policies. He has already announced that he's going to close Guantanamo Bay, which had been a campaign promise. But we all know it's going to take a year to go do that at a minimum, and there's still some question about where he's going to put many people who still need to be held, even if they're not held at Guantanamo. In the area of the covert actions I mentioned, I think it's going to be very difficult for Barack Obama to cancel two of the biggest covert programs that George Bush started up. One was ground actions into Pakistan from Afghanistan. The other was the programs to undermine the Iranian nuclear program, because if diplomacy fails, you need a plan B. So my guess is we're in for a year of stories like Charlie Savage's story of cases where the change isn't quite as big as people may have first thought when they elected President Obama. And that's because when you get into the ugly details of these, sometimes these are difficult to unwind.
Hmm. And is that always the case, do you think, that we don't make major change when we go from presidential election to presidential election, David?
Frequently it's the case. It's more often the case in foreign policy than it is in, say, domestic policy. And I think, you know, in domestic arena, you've seen big change. I mean, the announcement yesterday on the aid to keep foreclosures to a minimum is something the Bush administration could have done at the beginning of this crisis and didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was a very major change. But watch today. President Obama's on his first foreign trip to Canada. It's not that foreign to people who live in Wisconsin, but, you know, to those of us in Washington, it's still a foreign country, right? During the campaign, he was beating up on NAFTA, saying, you know, we may need to reopen the entire trade agreement, something that, of course, many in Mexico would like to go do, but for very different reasons, right? My guess is when you watch him today, you're not going to hear a lot of discussion about renegotiating NAFTA top to bottom.
David Sanger is our guest, and David is author of an important book of this year. Some have said it's the most important book of the year, The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. We're going to continue with him in just a moment. We want to let you know that this is the premium, the gift to you. If you can pledge at $150 this hour, we'll be happy to send you. As you can see, he's an engaging speaker, and he's, can I say this, he's even a more engaging writer. Well, he's equally engaging in both areas. That's what I meant to say, and that's indeed what he is. Plus, it's a very important book. We're in a pledge drive, our winter pledge drive, and I'm Kathleen Dunn, of course, here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Your support actually makes these, you know, think about that, makes these conversations possible. It's your support that makes these kinds of important conversations possible. It's easy to make your donation. Go online, WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. Joining me in our Milwaukee studio, Cheryl Gasser. And Cheryl, hello again.
Hello, Kathleen. We have a goal this hour, $2,500. And I am happy to report that we are well on our way thanks to your very generous listeners. We have raised just about $2,000, so $525 left to raise. I know a lot of those members, people calling in, renewing their pledges, joining for the first time, picked up David's book for a pledge of $150 a year. Your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio is so important. WPR is listener-supported, and your pledge helps to make this program and everything you hear possible. So don't wait. Contribute now. Go online, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552.
And you heard David even. I don't know if you heard him because you've been doing things in the office, say that when he's in Wisconsin, he listens to us all the time.
Of course.
He loves the radio.
He's got great taste.
Hey, yeah, he does. Some listeners think that we operate with federal tax dollars, but that's just 7% of our budget. There's your news for the day. By comparison, listener contributions are 33% of our budget. And your support, of course, is just so important to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know that, please make a pledge of support at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, $150, David's book. If you can't afford that, just it's good to know that many of you listen, and whatever you can afford, we appreciate it. First-time gift maybe of $60 or $5 a month, any amount that's comfortable for you. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Make a contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio because you care about politics, you care about the world around you, and that's what you're going to learn about in this book. David Sanger's book, The Inheritance, yours for a pledge of $12.50 a month or more per year at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. As you've heard this hour, he's a very engaging speaker. Kathleen, you've read the book, a wonderful writer. He talks about Iran and China, Pakistan, Afghanistan, the threat that's facing, the challenges that are facing our new president. And you hear about topics like that on your show every day, and that is worth a pledge of support. So put a price on it. Think about how much you value Wisconsin Public Radio and the Kathleen Dunn Show, and then go to your web, WPR.org, or make a call, 888-202-2552.
We, of course, the producers of this program, Rhonda Fanning, Rob Schroeder, try to be as timely as possible, and they do a superb job in choosing topics and guests. Carmen Jackson as well, who booked this program for us. Senator George McGovern. It was so neat to have a show. McGovern was with us on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and he was talking about Abraham Lincoln. I had a great time. But then he talked about Afghanistan, and it's interesting now to have a guest 2 days later who also talks about Afghanistan from a different perspective. So you get David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for the New York Times, and Senator George McGovern. It's just
those 2 hours alone.
Well, it doesn't get better. Well, exactly. Just for those 2 hours, send us a pledge. Thank you. It's WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Any level is important. Every pledge matters. Any amount makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. But again, at that $12.50 a month level or more, we'll be so happy, if you'd like it, to send you David Sanger's book, The Inheritance. And at that level, too, the member benefit card coming your way. That is looks like a credit card, actually saves saves you money, Kathleen. I think I've got one. I've
sure.
used it frequently. 2-for-1 entrees at hundreds of restaurants around the state. 2 nights for the price of 1 at many B&Bs, arts and cultural attractions. What a great way to show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. Again, our way of saying thank you to you for a pledge of $150 a year or more, the book and the member benefit card coming your way. So don't delay. WPR.org. Or call 888-202-2552.
Thanks so much, Cheryl. We'll talk to you a little bit later. David Sanger is remaining with us, and we have more phone calls that we'll take for him. 800-486-8655 is our number. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. David Sanger is our guest. The book is The Inheritance, and it looks at a number of issues, I guess, takes the broad question, and an important one it is, why is it that the past administration pursued a path that left us less admired by our allies, less feared by our enemies, and less capable of convincing the rest of the world that our economic and political model is worthy of emulation. And what is it leave for the current administration, President Obama, and how he might be able to change course in certain areas. So it's an important work. We go to Mike from Appleton next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with your guests. I've read your book. I devoured it. It was absolutely fascinating, and I highly recommend it to everybody else.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm not going to pledge this hour, because I already have the book. I'll wait for a further hour further down the line. The question I have for your guest is the following. Iran is a problem. North Korea is a problem. But I think the number one problem that is facing us, of course, is Pakistan. And my question would be, what are we going to do? What plans are there if Pakistan collapses? And I think that's obviously Al-Qaeda's aim, and to get their hands on those nuclear weapons. What do we do?
Mike, you've asked a great question, and I would agree with you. When I went through the process of writing this book, which was I took a 14-month leave from the paper to just sort of go out around the world, try to do some reporting and get my head around the nature of the problems the next president would face, not knowing, of course, at the time who that president would be. I guess I emerged from this believing that Pakistan is probably our single greatest geographic problem. I mean, we could discuss, you know, non-proliferation and global warming and so forth as our non-territorial problems. It's very difficult to get people in the United States government to talk about what our backup plan is if Pakistan completely devolved into chaos. I know that, and I report in the book, that every few months there are usually classified gaming scenarios that take place either at the National War College or other military facilities that look at the question of, could we grab all the weapons if that happened, or could the weapons be secured in some other way, or could we trust that the Pakistani army will actually manage to hold on to the weapons themselves? And, you know, the one piece of good news is the one institution in Pakistan that actually seems to operate well is the army. That's the good news. The bad news is that as you may recall from the scenes in the book, Director McConnell, who was the director of national intelligence, and other U.S. officials came to the conclusion last year that, as a matter of policy, the Pakistani government is supporting the Taliban on the side, that they are our great ally on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, but Tuesdays and Thursdays they're fighting the other side of the war, sometimes with the $10 billion that we have sent to help them fight the Taliban. And they are doing that because they believe that we're going to leave Afghanistan, and that when we leave Afghanistan, that India will move even further into southern Afghanistan and surround Pakistan and crush it. So this becomes part of the old India-Pakistan rivalry. And it's one of the reasons that I think what you heard from Senator McGovern, who I enormously respect, I think it would be difficult for us to pull out, because I think as soon as we did that, Pakistan would see that it would have no other option than to support the Taliban.
Can you talk, let's move into this area of respect somehow. When you talk about what happened the last 8 years, we're less admired by our allies, less feared by our enemies, and less capable of convincing the rest of the world that our model is worthy of emulation. There was something, and you could see it, I don't want to be too amorphous about this, but there was something about the election of, and you saw it, President Obama, that inspired people in Kenya and people in Indonesia and people all over the world, that we are maybe holding up to what our values are, who we are as a country. Can you take that in some direction? Is that
sure.
important? And will that make some kind of difference in all these places in the world? Has it already? Will it continue?
I think it has made a difference already, and I'm sure it will continue to. My colleague Nick Kristof, a columnist.
Great writer.
Great writer and an old friend from back in college days and served in China for us when I was in Japan. And he had Chinese friends who said to him, the United States will never elect a black president. Now, you heard people say that. Some people say that in the U.S. And I think that in places like China, certainly throughout Europe, his election was a sign that America had moved hugely. And I think that impressed a lot of people. But I think we also have to remember that despite the symbolic importance of that, and it's huge, when it comes down to specific issues, there is some question about how much the Obama factor is going to count. I wrote on this in the Weekend Review last Sunday of the Times. And what's the value of the Obama factor abroad? And I'll tell you what's going to be the test. When President Bush was in office, he had a very difficult time getting countries to stay in Iraq. And at the end of his time in office, he had a very difficult time talking them into staying or committing more troops to Afghanistan. Now President Obama has committed an additional 17,000 American troops to Afghanistan. They're going to be there for a long time. And he has asked each of the NATO allies to give him their analysis of what needs to be done. And they recognize there's a bit of a trap in this. Because in April, when he goes to Europe, he's going to say to them, okay, you've given us your plan. We've looked at it. We agree with you. It's a growing problem. Here's what we're contributing to solving it. What are you contributing? And at that moment, they're going to have to decide whether they have to put more people in as well.
Right.
And that's going to be the test of the Obama effect.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's go back to phone calls. And we thank you very much, Mike, for your call. Our next caller is Jim from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Well, I'll leave it to the guest to talk about how we could give Pakistan some serenity on India. But I'd like to look at 9/11 and why we got there in the first place and the premise that we got there on. And it's important because 9/11 not only got us into Afghanistan, but was used to yoke us up to get into Iraq. And the premise was that, well, you know, if we don't stop them over there, they're going to come here. But in reality, look at the places that terrorism is taking place in the world. Part of the planning for 9/11 apparently was done in Germany, and then there's, of course, Yemen and Saudi Arabia and Indonesia, and even terrorism taking place in England and Spain. And so theoretically, where in the world don't we go to stop terrorism from being planned over there and coming here? And I would argue, you know, forget about the conspiracy stuff for today, but the just on a lesser basis, the best you can say for the Bush administration was criminal negligence in allowing 9/11 to happen in the first place. And if you go to the net under Israel aircraft, the cockpit aircraft security, and you do some look up about the flight of Pan Am that was blown up over Scotland, the record that comes out is that the airlines in America knew for a long time that we weren't safe and secure, and the government went along with it and didn't do anything to bring them up to snuff like the Israelis did. And so they let all of this happen, and the issue isn't that they can come from there over here. The question is, what are we going to do at home to maintain our security here? And if we had done it right in the first place, we wouldn't have this problem.
David, your response.
Sure. Terrorism is a tactic, and so you do what you can to mitigate the use of the tactic. But let's face it, if our measure is that we're going to wipe out all terrorism in the world, it's never going to happen. It's an old tactic. What you want to do is prevent the terrorists from getting the worst weapons, because bad as 9/11 was, and it was a horrific event, you could imagine a much worse one involving nuclear weapons, biological weapons, or even cyber warfare. And that's why the end of the book is three chapters called Three Vulnerabilities. So what can you do? The first is we militarized our foreign policy, which is to say that we put far more into trying to track down terrorists than we did into rebuilding the societies in which they grow. And I describe in the book how President Bush went off to give a very inspiring speech about a Marshall Plan for Afghanistan in March of 2002, and then there was no Marshall Plan for Afghanistan. We just didn't do it. So that's one part. But the second part is we have underinvested in the technologies at home that we need to make us safe here. And at the end of the book, in the nuclear chapter, I describe how we have put nuclear detectors at the ports that at the Port of Los Angeles alone go off 600 times, 400 to 600 times a day, and they are being set off by granite countertops and toilets from China and kitty litter. And we have not managed to sort out the problem that you could run Little Boy, the bomb we dropped on Hiroshima, through those same detectors, and it wouldn't move the needle. So, you know, we're spending $500 million a year on this. Well, that's about 28 hours of operations in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And my guess is if you asked most of your listeners, if you could spend twice or three times that money, would you rather have it spent, you know, on Iraq as a way to make us safer or on these detection technologies? I think the question answers itself.
And right now we're going to ask them to give us a little bit of money for pledge. David, you're fabulous. Thank you ever so much for being with us. The book is great. I'm glad listeners have already read it. It's terrific.
Well, thanks, you, Kathleen, anytime. I'd love to come talk to you.
Good. We'll call you again. David Sanger, the book is The Inheritance, The World Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power. It is relatively new, and I'm glad we had a listener call in and say that he couldn't put it down. It's worth your read. And if you can pledge $150, you'll not only be better informed about it, what's going on in the world, because this guy is a great reporter, you'll also help us out with our pledge drive. $150, WPR.org or 888-202-2552 for you to join our pledge drive this fall. It's so important you call. Cheryl Gasser is with us, and Cheryl Gasser, we're doing all right this hour. We could move it ahead a little bit, huh?
We absolutely could. We had a goal, I want to say. We had a goal of $2,500 for the hour. You and David Sanger blew through that in the first half hour. We've raised about $4,700 so
far. Right.
But you know what? There's still a few minutes left in the hour, so let's hear
from more.
Right,
you want this book, everybody. You want the book.
Let's hear from more of you. There's about 3-4 minutes left to go in the hour for a pledge of $12.50 a year or more to Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's hear from you now, 888-202-2552. Or pledge online at WPR.org. It is quick and easy, and it takes about 3 minutes of your time. We'll be happy to send you David Sanger's brand-new book, The Inheritance.
Right. And, you know, this is the caliber of guests. This isn't unique. We hear people like this all the time, this caliber of guests. Just this week, it's been George McGovern on Tuesday and David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for The New York Times. When I heard him, I think it was on NPR, actually, a few weeks ago, I said to Rhonda, this guy's fabulous. We got to get him on the show. And there's Rhonda, got him on the show right away. And he's worth hearing, and the book is really worth reading. I read a lot of books. Believe me, he's worth reading. So make your pledge online right now. We have just a few minutes left for you to be able to receive his book, Inheritance, WPR.org, or call toll-free at 888-202-2552.
These are wonderful guests, Kathleen, and not only do people get to listen, but they get to call in, they get to email their questions and comments and take part in the conversation. What is that worth to you? Think about what Wisconsin Public Radio brings to you. Think about what Kathleen and Rhonda Fanning and Rob Schroeder and Carmen Jackson do. What a great team. We're happy that they are here and part of Wisconsin Public Radio, but you are too, as a member, as a listener. Pledge at whatever level you can afford, but at the $150 a year level, we'll be so happy to send you The Inheritance. WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Pledge now to support the accessibility, which Cheryl so well described, to radio, your ability to talk to all of these people as well. And they're, you know, it's nice for some of these people to really be in touch with people in the Heartland to find out what they're thinking. I think that's one of the reasons, because you're so smart too, people agree to do this program. Call with your pledge, please. Do we have a goal? Are we
Well, we have a goal, but you made it. So we're upping the goal.
Right, we're upping the goal. We're upping the goal. We want to make as much as we can. All right. And it's just the last couple minutes to be able to receive David's book as well. David Sanger's brand new book, receiving all kinds of attention, has been called perhaps the best book of the year. The World in Obama Confronts and the Challenges to American Power, The Inheritance is the name of it. And our pledge number again is 888-202-2552 or WPR.org, $150 pledge, and the important book is yours.
I think in the next few minutes, Kathleen, the next 2-3 minutes, we can get another $1,000 in support of this show, in support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It takes 3 minutes of your time. Keep calling. Call through the news. Let them know that you wanted to pick up David Sanger's book for a pledge of $150. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
And you decide what the amount of your pledge is going to be. I know there maybe $60. Some of you could pledge $60, $150. You can get this book. Whatever you can give, thank you so much for your gift. It just keeps us going. And one of our listeners said, you know, if I don't contribute, I don't have WPR, which, you know, is true. You're a huge part of our budget. And we're not going away, but you need to contribute to keep us going.
Well,
that's for sure.
We couldn't do what we do.
We can't do it without you.
We cannot do it without you. You truly are the public and public radio, and we need your support now. WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing this program and to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Lisa Nalbandian helping us out with Pledge. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser for coming in to Pledge with me. Remember that number. Call right now. You'll still be able to get the book. I guarantee you you'll be delighted that you did. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. Thank you, everybody.